This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 3, 2026 in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
It was a cold, cold, blustery day in April of 2010. My wife Dorcas and I were working and living in Colorado for Choice Books, and we were rushing to finish up our service route as quickly as we could that day because we wanted to head east to Kansas for the commissioning service of her sister and her husband as they were getting ready to move to Thailand. We wanted to get there before too late at night, but the real reason we were rushing was because there was a storm coming off the mountains that was predicted to track all across the Central Plains, and we wanted to beat it out of there. We started early, we ran fast, we got done, we wrapped up our last door, and we rushed back to the house, where we threw some clothes in a suitcase, we threw everything in the car, and hit the road. And it had started snowing about half an hour before we got on the road. But I knew, based on looking at radar and on how storms and knowing how storms track in that part of the world, that if we'd be able to push out of it on the front range, I can drive faster than the storm is going to travel. So I knew if we could push out on the front range, we could stay ahead of it the rest of the way to Kansas. We were running a half an hour behind schedule. We had everything in the vehicle, turned on to Highway 50, and remembered that we had forgotten the garment bag. So we turned around and went rushing back to the house, threw it in the back seat, and tried again. Came off 115, turned on to Highway 50, but we couldn't turn on to Highway 50. Because in the 15 minutes that it took us to get our garment bag, the gate had lowered. The ramp was closed, and nobody was going east on Highway 50 that night. Kicking ourselves and discouraged about running behind, we weren't going anywhere except home. So we went home. And there was nothing to do that night except go to bed and wish that we were on the road. So we went to bed. It was a doozy of a storm that dropped 12 to 20 inches of snow all across the Central Plains. That storm closed every highway from Colorado Springs to Kansas City. Nobody was going anywhere. So the next morning we woke up and I feverishly refreshed KDOT's website to see when the roads would open up again. All day, red, red, red. And so we sat and we waited. And as soon as the roads opened up, we knew we wanted to be on the road. So we didn't really want to start anything. So we started playing some games. We didn't have a lot of games in our house at that point, but we had chess. So we played 5 games of chess, and I lost all 5 of them. And after I had had about as much of that fun as I could take, we switched to Monopoly. And I lost 3 games of Monopoly. You know, by that time, my ego was sorely bruised and my sense of humor completely non-existent. But even then, I knew that those were just games. They were just games with no real consequences on my life. But the game of life we play, however, has far higher stakes. And since then, Dorcas and I have learned that our relationship is more successful when we play together rather than against each other. And at work, losing in unhealthy competition can be game-ending, not just for your business, but for the success and growth of everyone involved. So today I want you to know that success is a team sport, so that you coach your team to keep winning. How many players does chess have? You know the answer to this, two. Chess has two players. When is the game over? When the one player is in checkmate, the king cannot go anywhere, right? And if you're far more strategic than I am, you actually know how to play chess. But chess has established rules with expected logical outcomes, and we know when the game ends, when the king can't move and is in checkmate. Monopoly is a little different. There are multiple players, but all of those players start with the same resources, and there are still established rules for how to play, and with some mixture of skill, strategy, and luck, the game is over when one player ends up with all of the money in the property and everyone else is broke. These are finite games. They are played with known players, with fixed rules, and an agreed-upon objective that, when reached, ends the game. I found Simon Sinek's book, The Infinite Game, to be a helpful frame for making sense of some of the different environments that I encounter. And this afternoon, I'd invite you to rent the idea with me that there are actually two kinds of games that we play. Infinite games have known and unknown players. There are no exact or agreed-upon rules. The manner in which a player chooses to play is entirely up to them, and they can change how they play the game at any time. Infinite games don't have a finish line or a practical end to the game. There is no such thing as winning an infinite game. In an infinite game, the primary objective is to keep playing and to perpetuate the game. And we know this. We play these games in our lives. We know that there are things that have no finish lines and no winners. Think about marriage and friendship. When do you win at marriage and friendship? When do you get first place in marriage or friendship? We don't. We keep playing and getting better. A school might be finite, but learning is infinite. We can get a job or promotion, but no one has ever crowned the king of winners. We don't win our careers. No matter how successful we are in this life, no one will ever get a first place in life award when everyone else loses. Winning in business means we can show up again the next day more effectively. Now, all of these things are journeys, not specific events. Winning means getting better today than we were yesterday. And I believe that one of the mistakes we make in life is that we try to play an infinite game as if it were finite. We think about, is an employee good or is an employee bad? We think about whether we are succeeding or failing in business. We boil down the value of people to productivity metrics. We think that winning sometimes in a zero-sum game means making sure your opponent loses. Today, I want you to know that success in the infinite game of business is a team sport, so you coach your team to keep winning. I believe as we lead our teams, one of our primary roles as leaders is to establish reality. And establishing reality starts with data gathering and diagnosing the situation. In addition to determining whether a situation is what Sinek calls either a finite or an infinite game, I'd ask you to rent the idea that there are additionally two different kinds of challenges we face in those games. And I owe a lot to the Kansas Leadership Center for helping provide some of the framework for some of these ideas. So I'm going to ask you to rent the idea with me that in life, we often deal with technical and adaptive challenges. And I want to flesh that out a little bit for you. So a technical challenge here, when we were leaving our place in Kansas on Friday morning, we got up, got all of our children packed up, we were rolling down the road, everything was going well, we were about an hour down the road, and all of a sudden, ding, 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 I saw a warning light on my dash that said, service charging system soon. And that isn't actually what I wanted to see at the beginning of a 19-hour trip. Knowing what that probably meant, we pulled into a small town, took it to the dealership, and asked them to pull the codes. They said, yeah, it's probably the alternator, which is what I thought it was. Well, that was good. At least, you know, we knew what the problem was. And they said, and we can't work on it today. So what's the problem? What is the problem when an alternator fails? It's clearly defined, right? The alternator provides power to the engine and to the electrical system that fires that provides the power to get us down the road. If the alternator doesn't work, we have a problem. And that problem is very clearly defined. There is not enough power. And the solution to that technical challenge is pretty clear and known. If the alternator is bad, it needs to be good. Right? So we know how to fix the problem. It's clear and known. And I know enough about mechanic work just to make a really big mess. So it is not my work to dive into this. When the challenge is technical, it is the work of experts and authorities to fix the problem. And if I took it to the service writer at the shop that was able to get us fixed up then, and I'd say, hey, you know, we were an hour down the road, we made it back, I put a new battery in so we could get here, I need a new alternator. If he would say, oh yeah, alternators. You know, I've heard of those. Well, let me see, now what do they do again? I'm looking for a different shop, right? When the challenge is technical, we want attitudes. We want people with authority and expertise to fix them. And because we were trying to get here, I wanted this problem fixed as soon as possible. And when I gave them way too much money and I drove off their lot, I expected the problem was fixed, right? When the challenge is technical, when you're done, you're done, right? The problem is fixed. And again, some of the same ideas of leadership attitude. I want confidence and skill. Now think about an adaptive challenge. And I'm asking you to rent the idea that this is different from a technical challenge. And I'll use the example of something in our company that we wrestled with last year, where one of the things we do is we provide janitorial services for a variety of folks in our community. And we noticed something through the year that we were getting more complaints from our clients. And frankly, we aren't used to dealing with complaints from our clients. But over and over, as we track them, certain people showed up consistently. We started losing customers because we had complaints. So what's the problem? The nature of the problem in an adaptive challenge is that we're getting complaints, right? Well, why are we getting complaints? I don't know, maybe they're just grumpy, right? But the problem requires learning. So how do we fix it? Tell people not to complain. Also, probably not super effective, right? But for some clients, it was a complaint about attitude. For some clients, it was a complaint about cleanliness. For other clients, it was something completely different. How we fix the problem emerges through learning. And whose work is it? We have to engage all stakeholders. I have to talk to clients. I have to talk to my managers. I have to talk to the frontline team. In an adaptive challenge, you have to have all stakeholders across the system engaged to make progress on an adaptive challenge. And as much as my ego would like for it to be true, we're not going to get it right the first time. We're going to experiment, we're going to test things, and we're going to learn from those things that we didn't get right the first time, and we're going to try again. And the timeline simply isn't as easy as snapping my fingers and saying, we have now fixed the problem. This was work we spent all year fixing? Maybe. We still haven't fixed it. But you know what? We've made a lot of progress on that challenge. So in an adaptive challenge, we don't always get to fix it. But that doesn't mean we can't make progress on it. And instead of an attitude of confidence and skill, the attitude that we need to have to make progress on adaptive challenges is one of curiosity and openness. Now, hear me clearly that most challenges have elements that are technical and elements that are adaptive. It's not the technical is bad, adaptive is good. You need both. Both elements are usually present in challenges. So if the issue is technical, fix it quickly and efficiently using your expertise and authority. But if the issue is adaptive, you need a different set of tools to make progress on those challenges. And as a culture, I think we as conservative Anabaptists are generally really, really good at fixing logical and technical issues. A risk, though, is when we bring those technical tools to fix adaptive challenges. And we all know what happens when we use the wrong tool for the job. If we make progress at all, it takes longer and probably doesn't give us the result that we want. So I'd encourage you to sit in diagnosis longer than is usual, especially when our tendency is to jump into action. The third idea I'd ask you to rent is that leadership and authority are not the same thing. They often overlap, both are necessary and complementary, but I think they are distinct things. So, potential definitions for this, I'm going to ask you to rent this idea that authority is providing protection, direction, and order in exchange for cooperation. Authority is providing protection, direction, and order in exchange for cooperation. And leadership is mobilizing others to make progress on our most difficult and important challenges. Authority alone is never enough to fix adaptive challenges. Our teams and people in general are inherently adaptive, and leveraging our positions of authority alone won't fix them. We must lean into leadership to make progress. So again, today I want you to know that success in the infinite game of business is a team sport, so you coach your team to keep winning. We'll talk more about this later, but it's important to keep the work where it needs to be. Be clear about what is your work and what others are responsible for. And like Tim very ably taught us earlier, how we think about ourselves can make that really tricky sometimes. Have you ever wished that another person, or that person, or they, would just get their act together and quit causing you so many issues? And if you're thinking about that person and they're sitting beside you, don't look meaningfully at them right now. You know, I have come to believe an uncomfortable truth about organizational life, and that's this: that systems are perfectly designed to get the results they are getting. Systems are perfectly designed to get the results they are getting. Now, to be sure, they aren't always intentionally designed for those results, but many adaptive challenges are systemic issues rather than individual problems. And in my own organization, I'm usually my biggest adaptive challenge. And in my position of authority, I do have significant influence in my system. But when I'm unclear, when I haven't sorted out my own competing values, or I haven't designed an effective system, things don't go well. And when I see problems, often my first instinct is to go looking for who else needs to change to fix the problem. Jim Collins, in his book, Good to Great, says the best leaders look out of the window to give credit and look in the mirror to assign blame. The best leaders look out of the window to give credit and look in the mirror to assign blame. So when you encounter problems, look in the mirror first before you look out of the window. Another distinction that I hope might be helpful is one between coaching and directing or commanding. I'll use those two terms interchangeably. Again, they're both necessary and they're both helpful tools, but I don't think they're the same thing. I think that coaching is curious. Coaching centers the needs of the client or your conversation partner rather than what you have come to say. Coaching asks open-ended questions, and we heard great examples of this earlier today. Coaching explores underlying and related issues, and coaching engages all stakeholders. And I think that's different than commanding, which again is important, necessary, and right. But commanding or directing leverages your position of authority. Commanding or directing gives clear, concise instructions, and it establishes non-negotiables. It expresses or implies consequences. And again, both of these are things that as leaders we need to keep in our toolbox, and wisdom is knowing when to reach for which one. And I want to call us back to the definitions of authority and leadership that I offered earlier. Authority is providing protection, direction, and order in exchange for cooperation. Leadership is mobilizing others to make progress on the issues that are most important, regardless of position. Today, I want you to know that success in the infinite game of business is a team sport, so you coach your team to keep winning. So I'd love to get some answers in the room here. If I say the words compassionate accountability, what do you think about? Hosea, what do you think? Okay, so accountability is answering to somebody. Okay? Tim?
Mentoring.
Okay? Yeah. Somebody else, somebody over here. When you think about compassionate accountability, what do you think? Brent, what's coming to mind for you? Nothing yet. Who else?
Consequences.
How's that compassionate? Yeah. So when we think about mentoring and consequences, you know, we know that that's part of our work as business leaders, right? Do any of you feel sometimes like you have to choose between being compassionate or holding people accountable? Yeah, I see some heads nodding. I thought maybe that just happened in my organization. I think often we think about balancing compassion and accountability. And maybe we don't actually have to choose. And I've gotten a lot of really helpful content for this portion from a book by this title, Compassionate Accountability, by Nate Regeer. And he offers the definition of compassion as compassion is the practice of demonstrating that people are valuable, capable, and responsible in every interaction. And the Latin root for our word compassion means to struggle with or suffer with. It's not feeling sorry for somebody. It's not loving somebody. It's not wishing somebody well. Compassion is about struggling or suffering with people. And I want to break that down just a little bit more. Compassion is the practice. Compassion is a behavioral skill set that improves with practice. Compassion is the practice of demonstrating. Compassion is more than a feeling, a concept, or a principle. It must be observable through behaviors. Unless we can all agree on observable behaviors, we can't measure it or teach it, set goals around it, or see if we are making progress. Compassion is the practice of demonstrating that people are valuable, capable, and responsible in every interaction. He says that these three aspects of compassion are all necessary, but not sufficient on their own. They work together and they rely on each other. And this reinforces that compassion is not in competition with accountability. In every interaction, every moment counts. Every conversation is an opportunity to be compassionate. And he offers as a model the illustration of switches. He talks about the switch for value. He talks about the switch of capability. He talks about the switch of responsibility. So think about a switch or a valve or something as being an object that something else can flow through. If it's an electrical switch, when you close that connection, the electricity flows through. If it's a water valve, when you open the valve, water flows through. So when the value switch is turned on, the fundamental belief that people are unconditionally valuable flows through. And when the value switch is turned off, we allow conditions such as individual differences, group affiliations, past experiences, or performance to influence our perception of a person's value. So how do we turn on a value switch? We listen to and we validate feelings without judgment. We assume positive intentions and check assumptions. We affirm experiences even if you can't relate. We empathize by finding common emotional ground. And we're transparent by sharing our own feelings, emotions, and vulnerabilities. Remember that you don't have to agree with someone to value them as a person. We can separate the person and the behavior. When the value switch is turned on, the fundamental belief that people are unconditionally valuable flows through. When the capability switch is turned on, we believe and behave in ways that affirm that capability and contribution are possible. And turning on the capability switch involves the fundamental belief that anyone can be part of the solution. And when the capability switch is turned off, we view capability as limited or stagnant. We see barriers instead of opportunity. We say or think things like, well, you'd never understand. We expect people to prove themselves before we trust or believe in them. We take failure as a sign to abandon ship or give out, give up, shape up, ship out. So how do we turn on the capability switch? We seek first to understand. We share ideas and resources to find the best solutions. We invite other people to be part of the solution. We invest in each other's successes. We turn failures into learning opportunities. Turning on the capability switch involves the fundamental belief that anyone can be part of the solution. And the last is the responsibility switch. When the switch is on, we believe and behave in ways that share responsibility for outcomes. Turning on the responsibility switch involves the fundamental belief that everyone is responsible for their own thoughts, feelings, and actions. We are responsible only for our own thoughts, feelings, and actions, not those of others. Regardless of what happened before, we are 100% responsible for what we do next. And when our responsibility switch is turned off, we lose track of the fundamental fact that we can't control others, but we can control our own responses. In an effort to mask our discomfort or inadequacies and avoid difficult conversations, we isolate responsibility in ways that get us further from real solutions. When our responsibility switch is turned off, we forget or abandon the boundaries about who's responsible for what. So how do we turn on the responsibility switch? We take ownership of our own thoughts, emotions, and actions. We allow others to take responsibility and ownership of their thoughts, emotions, and actions. We ask directly for what you want and need. We enforce boundaries, standards, and commitments without blaming, attacking, or threatening. And we keep the most important thing, the most important thing. Turning on the responsibility switch involves the fundamental belief that everyone is responsible for their own thoughts, feelings, and actions, and we are responsible for our own thoughts, feelings, and actions, not those of others. Regardless of what happened before, we are each 100% responsible for what we do next. Regeer says we often think we have to choose between compassion or accountability, and he argues that the choice is not between compassion and accountability, but between compassion and drama. Drama is what happens when we respond to conflict by struggling against ourselves or each other with or without awareness to feel justified about our own behaviors. And if you are interested in learning more about what that can look like, Leadership and Self-Deception by the Arbinger Institute, I found to be a tremendously convicting and really helpful exploration of some of that. When it comes to drama, we set up win or lose situations. That's not compassion. Most drama is habitual, while compassion is intentional. With drama, we seek justification rather than what's best for all. Drama is self-serving, while compassion pays equal attention to self, others, and the greater good. So if you're willing to rent some of the ideas that I'm presenting today, what do we do with them? I have four elements of effective coaching and evaluation I'd like to ask you to consider implementing. The first came from Compassionate Accountability by Regeer, where he quotes Doug Conant, who is the CEO that turned around the struggling Campbell Soup Company when the culture had deteriorated. People weren't held accountable, and the company was falling behind its competition. Doug Conant said this. He said, "Be tough-minded on standards and tender-hearted with people." Be tough-minded on standards and tender-hearted with people. And be clear about which is which. People do the work that does or does not meet the standard, but they are not the same thing as their work. Separate and be clear about your value for the person, whether their work is acceptable or not. The second element of effective coaching and evaluation is to communicate frankly and honestly without malice. So how many of you like having difficult, clarifying conversations with your team members? We have one. I want notes later. Difficult, clarifying conversations with our team members. And often, when we think about needing to have that clarifying conversation, I think about whether I'm going to be clear or whether I'm going to be kind, right? And if I default to kind, it usually takes me a long time to get to having this conversation. And effective leadership doesn't choose between being clear or being kind. And we know this. If you're an employee of a company, with the advancement of your career and stability of your job on the line, wouldn't you like to know what specific areas your behavior or performance needs to improve in, rather than being handed a pink slip one day and saying and hearing, "Don't bother coming back tomorrow"? We know that if we're not measuring up, clarity is kindness. Even if it's uncomfortable in the moment, we recognize that clarity about expectations and behaviors is helpful and an act of kindness. I'll tell you a brief story about one of the powerful experiences I had where I started learning this. I'm still trying to learn this. But I had an employee one time who really was struggling. And over and over, we'd have some of the same mistakes made. And because I'm the nice guy, what did I do? Just grit my teeth and I said, "Well, I know that mistakes happen. We'll just hope it doesn't happen again." All right? And then it happened again. And at some point, the frustration rose high enough that the pain of conflict was actually lower than the pain of continuing the same way we had been. So we had a conversation where I told him exactly what needed to change. We made some changes in the system to help facilitate some of those changes. And we got really clear about what outcomes we needed, and I told them that for the next several months, there would be next to zero latitude for mistakes. I told them what we need, how we're falling short of that, and there is no margin for error. And it had taken me quite a while to get worked up to having that conversation. And I said, if we don't get there, if we still have mistakes, I will have some difficult decisions to make about your continued employment. I felt like a jerk. I just told one of my team members that they were not measuring up to the standard we needed. And I told them if they didn't improve, their job was in danger. And I think, as long as I have a sound mind and good memory, I'll never forget what happened next. He thanked me for the conversation. And you know, we both knew that there was a problem. But now we had clarity about what the problem was, and what needed to change, and what clear direction was, and how we were going to measure that success. That clarity that made me feel like a jerk was actually a kindness to my team member who needed to know where they stood and what they could do to improve. Communicate frankly and honestly without malice. Be specific, be clear about accountability, be kind, all at the same time. The third element of effective coaching and evaluation is to give yourself and others permission not to have all of the answers. In the 1960s, Lawrence Peter identified a phenomenon, and he wrote about it. The phenomenon became known as the Peter Principle. The Peter Principle hypothesizes that organizations tend to promote people to their level of incompetence, then remove them or ignore them when they fail. Organizations tend to promote people to their level of incompetence, then remove them or ignore them when they fail. And again, we know this, right? Like, when you're looking at your team, say you're in construction, if you have a master carpenter and you're spinning off another crew, who are you going to have lead that crew? Somebody who's good at the job, right? You're good at fixing things. You're good at building things. We're going to make you the foreman. And then we discover that the skills needed to be a master carpenter might be different skills than the skills needed to lead a team. We often promote our best carpenters, but we fail to equip them with the tools they need to lead a team well. Coming back to the distinction between leadership and authority, authority means it is your job to make sure the issue is solved. Leadership is finding the best way to resolve the issue, whether it's your idea or not. So own your role and your responsibility, but don't confuse that with needing to have all of the answers and hold space for others to do the same. The incompetence that shows up in the Peter Principle is sometimes caused by people bluffing their way through situations because they mistakenly assume it is their job to have all of the answers. And that's a terrible situation we put each other in. The fourth element of effective coaching and evaluation is a reminder that tools don't work. You do. And Jamie Remsburg, who is a co-founder of Next Element with Nate Regeer, said this. And we know this from reality, that construction and building a new house would be a whole lot cheaper, easier, and faster if all we needed to do was have the right tools. I've spent thousands of dollars on ratchets and wrenches and other mechanics tools over the years, but just owning them wasn't enough to fix our alternator after it died. Tools are only effective in the hands of someone that knows what they are and how to use them. Tools don't work. You do. A number of years ago, for about a 4 or 5 year stretch, twice a year I helped teach a class at Wichita State University. It was a pre-semester, week-long, high-heat intensive called Leadership in Self and Society. 10 hours of class time per day in a very high-heat environment. And inevitably, about the middle of the week, a student would say something like, "This class isn't anything like I expected. I thought leadership was about leading other people, but so far this is mostly about leading myself." Ding, 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 we have a winner. That was not accidental, right? Telling other people what to do and leveraging a position of authority is the easy part. Managing ourselves, showing up effectively, continuously learning and growing, admitting when we're wrong and doing something different, choosing among our own competing values, that is the hard work of leadership. I am often my most difficult adaptive challenge. No operating system, checklist, book, program, or direction will effectively call your team to high performance unless we are willing to lean into the work of becoming the leader and coach that God wants us to be. Tools don't work. You do. So in conclusion, as we live in relationship, as we learn and we grow and we lead our businesses, I hope we remember that we are playing an infinite game where the impacts are eternal. And no short-term win is worth losing sight of the end goal of our lives. Receiving the crown of life and hearing the words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant," are how we'll know we've won in the infinite game of life and business. We show up most effectively and help our teams make more progress when we accurately diagnose the situation, when we discern which parts of a challenge are technical and which parts are adaptive, and we use the right tools to make progress on those challenges. If you're in a position of authority, Use it to provide protection, direction, and order. But remember that a position of authority is not the same thing as mobilizing others to make progress on the most important things. Effective leaders and coaches look out the window to give credit and look in the mirror to assign blame. Remember that coaching and commanding are two different tools. Remember that our roles ask us to struggle with our teams, and we need to make sure that our value, capability, and responsibility switches are turned on at all times. Be tough-minded on standards. Be tender-hearted with people. Communicate frankly and honestly without malice. Give yourself and others permission to not to have all of the answers. And finally, remember that tools don't work. You do. Success in the infinite game of business is a team sport. And I pray that God blesses you as you coach your teams to keep winning.